On the show today, we have Duane Bannon Harrison, who comes to share his ideology of bringing back the warrior to change the narrative, shift the mindset, and help men regain their connection, healing, and growth. He leads the way for change through a positive outlook and through the teachings of his grandfather and his old people.
Indigenous Health Med Talk with Dr. Danielle Arabina. Yarning with innovators, trailblazers and community leaders in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health and medicine. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are advised that this podcast may contain the voices of persons now deceased. This podcast is a General Practice Training Queensland initiative supported by Australian General Practice Training and the Australian Government.
Welcome to the show today. Now, I met Duane at the end of last year, I think it was. We were doing a virtual Wayapa workshop, and I was very taken by this gentleman who really held space beautifully for everybody on the course. I must admit, I was quite intrigued, and I did a little secret Google search of who is this fella who's just sitting with this amazing, almost healing presence. And I was quite intrigued by what I found. So I've asked my brother to come on to the show today. So welcome, Duane.
Good morning, my sister. Hello, everybody. Well, it's morning here at time of recording anyway. But and I'm just humbled to be here. Always eager to chat well-being, healing. You had me at a low. Congratulations on what you've done, sis, and the work that you do. Firstly, very humbling for you to acknowledge your connection with me, which isn't overly long, but it's been mega powerful. So our time was definitely a very interesting time in I think for all of us in that space. And I suppose we can tease it out a little bit later. But first and foremost, I'm a Yuwangaranji Ngarrugurrgalang man or Bau, and I hail from the south coast of New South Wales, better known as Yuin Nation or Yuin Country, Black Duck people. Our country has connections to our northern language group, neighbours, which are the Darawal people, the Darawal language, big part of with the Gomia and the Wadi Wadi people. So Illawarra, all the escarpment of Illawarra and north of the Shoalhaven River, down right through those invisible borders across the Victorian border, right down to the Snowy River. Now near Marlow is all my connection to country. And I also have connection to the Yorta Yorta people. I'm an Atkinson through my grandmother and her grandmother's line. And I also have connections to Jaja Warul through my grandfather's mother. And I also, in more recent times, which makes a lot of sense to me, I also have a Gamilaroi connection. So we've found another link to the rivers of kinship, and I have connection to that country, which makes a lot of sense for me in many ways. I went a long way to let you know and let the listeners know where I come from. There's plenty more where that came from, but I know that we can't talk about my genealogy lines all morning.
I love that you did such a beautiful and in-depth letting the audience know where your mob's from. As I talk to my registrars and to other doctors when we're teaching about cultural education, we talk about the importance of that cultural welcome, because it helps us find connections. As you said, the kinship river is that we find connections. So we always, when blackfellas, meet each other, we always go, hey, my name's Dr. Danielle Arabina, Miriam, mob, because we try to work out how we're related. We try to find that beautiful connection. So thank you for sharing that depth, and hopefully people can, encourage people to find out a little bit more about who their mob is. I think it's really, really important. So is there any other welcome that you like to do as part of your culture when you meet people?
Yeah, I like to get to know people, their story, their journey. But obviously being a very energetic person in terms of connection to energy in many ways, I suppose it's about feeling it out and where that person wants to have that chat.
And Duane, when I met you, when you were doing your Wayapa presentation, you did this really beautiful welcome and connection that made my heart sort of not stop, but I probably felt that energy in there, because it was like it was a beautiful heart song. So could I ask you, would you mind sharing that with the audience today?
Yeah, no worries. I've got a little different one for you, actually. So today is a different one. So songs are important to be sung in the seasons in alignment with what's going on. So this one is a song for the old people, grandmother and grandfather song.
Bango, Bango.
Yur baje na lagay na jangdar mirwa mingan na tang nga.
That was beautiful, and hopefully the sound came across, because I'm watching you on screen singing that, and I'm feeling tears come to my eyes, because not only could I sense your energy changing, but it just made me, you know, want to cry for my mother and for one of the Ngunkuri who was I was very closely connected to. So I'm feeling tears coming to my eyes, because it was just, I wasn't expecting that. So thank you, Dwayne, making me cry first thing in the morning.
You asked.
I know. So, you know, you and I both sit here in this space as people who work with energy and healing. So for maybe the more medical minded people, do you want to share a little bit about what that means in our culture?
For the listeners, there's a tiny little backstory there. I've, you know, been lucky enough to travel internationally to healing conferences. And one particular that was quite huge for me was going to the south of France under my grandfather's tutelage. So I'd be remiss of me not to acknowledge him first and foremost. I do a fair bit of work, and then I have done for the Australian National University med students as well, to take on the Indigenous stream. I've done that work for about 9 years. And what does that involve? Well, it involves them coming on country with me to learn about the creation story, look at healing components throughout that. And no doubt that when you walk country, when you connect to the elements, we're healing every day. So as we say in Waiapa, it's an embodiment of healing. It's a practice. It's ritualistic. Yeah, of course, old people got sick and medicine men or women would heal them, you know. The way that it's been taught from the old way is really about making it, for lack of a better term, a normal way of life, you know. But obviously that has been taken away, and we've had a bit of a chop and change over our history. So, yeah, it's bringing all that back, you know, bringing it all back, and it's never going to be perfect or quite the same.
I think the concept of healing is something that I've really struggled with since becoming a doctor, wondering how it's perceived. Because as you were saying, we've got, you know, in Australia, 60,000 years of Indigenous knowledge around healing. We know what plants to use. We know that there's energy pathways that are unseen in our bodies that, you know, particular people who've had training can use and activate. Our concept of medicine, it also involves soul work and soul journeying and traveling into different places and, you know, even people's bodies to sort of help remove things. I started in that paradigm as a healer and being taught, you know, particular things. And then moving into the medical world, you know, I had to shut everything down, shut that story down. And I realized that I had to merge the healer of me and the doctor in me together. And it was such a thing, because medicine's all about evidence-based. And whereas I sat down and I was like, where's the evidence for what we can do? And one of my teachers, not of this realm, told me that there's eons, generations of evidence. You know, I would have loved to have gone to one of those healing conferences to be surrounded by like people.
I think if we can base around, and you mentioned Ngunkuri earlier, you know, we've got ancient healers all around the world doing remarkable work. And when we have a cauldron of different people, different obviously anatomies and bringing our evolution together, I think it just really calls for that. It's what we say, and I know what's touted around a little bit as holistic wellness, and how I've been taught over the last 20 years by my elders is, you know, we have to strip it back, but Like I was talking with a friend the other day, there are many, you mentioned the word blockages, and blockages are, you know, energetically, if you've got energetic blockages, then there's layer upon layer of it. So it's a process. You know, holistic wellness is a process every single day. But I suppose in terms of a treatment, you know, there's so much work that we can do, but then it comes back to the self of the individual, as you know, as a healer. And I think our job is, more importantly, is to help guide the person themselves, because I could throw out many different really successful and incredible people, and I'll just name a few. You know, Wim Hof, David Goggins, I follow them because they're amazing people and they're different cats, and they obviously have been quite remarkable in what they've achieved. So just those two alone that I've followed in more recent times, that's all back to self. And as you know, I've ran a few marathons now, and having done that definitely helps you sort of really work on yourself internally from a, you know, from a, like you said, a totally different perspective. You know, mind, body, spirit is all working, you know, together, but they've got to find a some sort of harmony to get to the destination, you know? So there's so many things, but I think that would be the main thing is, you know, we've been taught to try to get back. Obviously prevention, you know, someone sort of is presenting and wants to do healing. As you know, there's no cookie cutter model. There's a real basic sort of fundamental principle. You know, breath's always good, and getting breath and getting people in a space, I suppose, to treat them. And that's just some of the real surface sort of layers of what I've been taught, you know.
Breath is certainly important. We need it to survive. But, you know, we often, that's a lot of things that, you know, particularly with mob, when I see them as patients or something, is I teach them different ways to breathe to help deactivate that fight or flight that's coming into our lives. Because, and you're talking a bit about emotional blockages that people might have as an energetic block, if we think about it in that way. And we have people in our communities that have experienced complex trauma and have had multiple traumas due to many different things. I honestly believe, and it's for everybody, not just Blackfellas or Indigenous mob, it's connecting to country, connecting to earth, to our great mother, is something that's going to heal us. And that idea of that interconnectivity to our great mother. So when the big bushfires came through at the start or the end of 2019, start of 2020, a lot of us mob felt sick and a grief and a deep sadness watching her burn, because not only was she burning, but all of our animal spirit, you know, our totems, our kinship, all of that was being eroded. And it's a big shock to our system. So is that something that you recommend? I mean, obviously, you're sitting here showing off on camera here. You got 42 km finisher. So, yeah. So it's making me feel bad because I just ate a muesli bar for breakfast and did absolutely no exercise.
But
yeah. Burn it up. But I love that you have that idea of, and I'm trying, like I'm a poor runner, like I'll give it a crack. But it is that euphoric feeling that you have afterwards. And so I can see if I had any perseverance or any inclination to run, it could also be a spiritual process, because you're out in the elements, connecting to the earth, running by, observing things.
Patience, tolerance, and respect is a big, you know, fundamental core sequence of values that has been, you know, firmly entrenched in my mindset by my elders. And I think we just got to move our body, hey, you know, and we're doing like a little bit when you start running, you're sort of walking and then walk, run, and then, you know, you might do 1K or 2K or,
walk,
you know.
Walk, run, swear. Walk,
yeah,
run,
that's it.
Like, pant a lot.
And it is. It totally is. And even at this sort of level of finishing a marathon, you're still applying those same fundamentals one step after the other. You know, you go through so many phases, as you said before, once you start going into the anaerobic phase and you start drawing off glycogen and fuel, you know, you go into a really interesting place, you know, in your mind. But having that spiritual connection, definitely, you know, I think it would help, or other runners maybe aren't totally woo-woo, but they're still having a spiritual experience, you know. But I suppose it's just the way that we go through it. In terms of the connectivity, the natural laws are the natural laws. And as long as we are human beings on this earth, they will always come through. We have to understand that, you know, grandfather's son, we say Natan Mumaj, will always be coming up long after where us humans are, you know, back to the mother again and going on to our next life, or wherever we may be, you know, that connection to the wisdom of the elements and the birds and the, we call it Bujan or the fish, reptiles, water mammals, animals. We're always the observer. We have to be the observer and learn from them. And once upon a time, all of us lived that way. It doesn't matter. We all lived that way back in our genealogy. And I think, I'm not saying this is necessarily true for everybody, but there is a big caucus out there that seem to have maybe consciously or unconsciously disassociated themselves with the land. Our wellness, basically, we say it pretty simple. Heal the land, heal the people. Heal the people, heal the land. You know, if country's sick, we are. You know, even that's the way that we're so, like you said before, interconnected to this. And every ceremony or connection or process, dance, language, it doesn't matter. Even our day-to-day tasks in the old ways, it was always, you know, always the basic fundamentals of the natural law. And I suppose what people of Australia, so to speak, or around the world, but particularly the listeners here in the country they call Australia, you have the number one, the oldest living culture and the greenest shared culture in the world. What I'm trying to get to is it's never too late. We know this work has been going on, but no more important than the time right now to do these sorts of things and work together when it comes to healing, you know?
And perhaps that could be a challenge for our listeners is to find a way to observe. So what I love doing is, I was talking about this the other day, actually, the full moon. So when I've got a mountain ridge in my backyard and I love watching the full moon come and she rests on the ridge like a coin that looks like about to roll away. It's such a magic. I'll wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning to watch it. And then I watch her dip her head behind the mountain ridge until her little last glimmer of light. And to me, that's so powerful. And the other thing I do is I track the sun where it's during the season, where it sets on the back of that mountain ridge. I think that that might be a great challenge for people because that's something that we do in mental health strategies as well when we talk about mindfulness. And if someone's having a, you know, they're feeling their anxiety rising, one of the things that we do is to help ground them and get them to reconnect. And we say, tell me 5 things you can see. And it stops that racing mind. So particularly if you're outside, I can see the bird, I can see that tree, you know, moving its branches with the wind. Finding those things, I think, to anchor and ground us is very important. But also, Dwayne, speaking of mental health, I'm going to drop in on you with your beautiful work around Bring Back the Warrior. I know that you've got a podcast, so everybody can go check out Bring Back the Warrior. We'll have a link for it, a shared link in our show notes, and plus all the work you're doing. But can you tell me a little bit about the why behind it and what it means as a movement?
So it's been a journey. It's been an amazing part around, I suppose, finding a really positive power. And I mean power in it, you know, not the usual perception of what power means. You know, power is also humility and vulnerability. Tapping into that and pushing, you know, what is quite a personal story, which is basically my life and everything that I've sort of deal with. But the why is to help men and sisters, brothers and sisters, to be better versions of themselves by learning from all my mistakes, you know, or my vulnerabilities, and to do, yeah, like you said, you mentioned the word mental health or mind wellness, doing positive things for others. And sometimes it's just those little acts of kindness or, you know, a little part of my story that can help you, which was evident earlier in the yarn today. Yeah, it completes you, you know, and you get better at it and understand that the warrior is many more things than what he's perceived to be, and nurturer, provider, protector, lover. It's now a really important dialogue that helps men connect. And I've just started running another online series, and we're 3 weeks into it at the moment. I've got about 10 or 11 men in this series that have reached out. So it wasn't really pushed out real hard. It was just put out there and they've all connected. And I've taken the big step to bring Second Nations men, aka non-Indigenous men, into the space, and they're absolutely loving it. And it was a big moment. It was a big moment for us because I find a lot of autonomy and a lot of power that it can be Indigenous led, can be conjured. It's similar to Waiapa, you know, it's got that essence of coming in and learning our way, you know. And I suppose that's what a lot of people are doing with cultural tours and different things. But I suppose I'm just doing it more in a well-being space and trying to flip that narrative around. So
beautiful, beautiful. So yes, we can all tune in and have a listen to your wise words, because I think my sister, Professor Kerry Arabina, has a concept called First Thousand Days Australia. And in there, she talks about the notion of men being shields. and the notion of men can be vulnerable, can be good fathers, that goes against the horrible stereotype that we have about First Nations men, that challenges the misconceptions. And that's why I loved when I met you, as I said at the start of this podcast, is that you were a gentleman. There's probably only a handful of men that I hold in that same regard or can feel that same sort of energy from. So I love that you have been using your own self and your own story, I suppose, as a exploration and a way to find modeling and role modeling, you know, what works, what doesn't. So I think that that's so powerful. Now, the other thing I was really intrigued by was food. You're a chef, is that correct?
Self-taught cook, not actually technically a chef, no. I didn't go to culinary school, but yeah, no, I'm a cook, and so is my wife. She's pretty handy too. We ventured into native foods, the connection through that. I've always loved food, and my earlier memories of my grandfather, actually on my mother's line, who's a proud Scotsman, and so I hail from, you know, Gaelic culture on my mother's line, and my earlier memories with my grandfather, who was a galley cook, you know, went around the world on the ocean liners from the age of 13, you know. So he was teaching me, and he's pretty handy. And yeah, that was my early memories of how I always, you know, love food and love cooking. And I was pretty, you know, as a kid, I was pretty quick in the kitchen and I could do stuff, you know. So anyway, park that and fast forward to an opportunity about 3 years ago. Obviously, we'd already done, you know, we do, you know, on country tourism, you know, tourism, Indigenous tourism. So we provide food on that experience. So we always had an in-house sort of catering aspect. But yeah, Kylie Kwong, actually, the Australian chef, she reached out. She knew my grandfather, and we also had another acquaintance. And yeah, we connected, and she invited us to one of her night markets where we went there, and I was asked to do some sort of traditional cooking method. I brought along some what we call a munja, which is blackfish, and some paper bark, some lemon myrtle. I got a little fire pit, real blackfella rogue way, and had the barefoot, you know, and they said the health authorities, you don't tell them that I did it. It was 3 years ago, but
try and catch it.
But no, it was all good, you know. And after that, we had a little plastic table out, and one of my good friends, Clarence Lockie, he was the MC on the night, and said, "Oh, maybe a gold coin donation," because we weren't, you know, selling food. And We put a hat out and made a few $100, you know. So I thought, all right, well maybe this is something. Anyway, we got a big buzz out of it, and that's how it all started. But, you know, working with the likes of Curtis Stone, some people might have noticed the latest series of Field Trip. He's got his own show out. He's a good guy, Curtis. He came and done a bit of work with me, featured on his latest Field Trip series. And also my good friend and a good brother in a gentleman named Ben Shuri, who so happens to run the best restaurant in the country in Attica, and he's an unbelievable human and a good fella. So obviously made some really great connections with the best in the industry. Look, our foods are our medicines are our foods, you know, as you've probably seen on the socials, to give people that little bit of an awakening, enlightenment to how easy what we say an Indigenous twist can be by just adding, you know a few lemon myrtle leaves, you know, out of a pot. A couple of native raspberries, you make a beautiful tea, you know, and that can be medicine for 4 or 5 days, you know, so have it hot or cold. So, yeah, there's a heap more to that, sis, but that's pretty much a shorter story, believe it or not. Yeah.
Well, no, I loved it because it's A, about food, which I love. So tell us what would be your favorite ingredient to cook with, medicinally, spiritually, yeah, emotionally? Yeah.
Probably sarsaparilla, a little vine leaf that has really good immunity booster. It's pretty versatile. Your Warrigal greens, obviously being right on the salt water, beach greens as they're known as well. What a lot of people don't know, they always give credit to the Kakadu plum as, you know, the main feature of massive vitamin C and, you know, all the good stuff that we know are in our nature's sweets. But I think the sleeping giant at it all is what they know as the rainforest plum or the Davidson plum. I think that one, yeah, it's right up there in my favorite fruit to use. It's incredible. And it is technically the richest vitamin C intake on this continent. Desert lime is the size of your pinky fingernail on average, and it has 7 times the potency of an introduced lime. So, you know, when we look at what we only take what we need, our natives, and that's what I say at all our forums is, you know, and say to the listeners out there, what can you do? Well, chuck a native in, you know, you can get them at your Bunnings and your main sort of nurseries these days. And you know, get a few pots and pop a few in and all the better for country. The more natives we have, they love to grow in tribes. We've noticed we keep all our natives together and they just sing to each other, you know.
I've got some beautiful lemon myrtle that goes up my driveway to my big healing space that I have. And we often use the lemon myrtle leaves as a connecting ceremony. Like I use it to help people connect to the earth, to the great mother, to everything that's passed over the leaves as well. Like that's, you know, the sun, the moon, the wind, energy is captured in that leaf.
Really powerful antioxidant too. Yeah,
there you go. Tastes bloody good too. So what else can I add lemon myrtle to?
You know, you could use it as a bit like a bay leaf, I suppose. It's also got a couple of really good cousins as well in the cinnamon myrtle. You know, there's a bit of a myrtle family. So the flowers also can be used. But yeah, definitely with fish, I think that's where you know, or like I said, chicken is great too. So
magic.
You know, where the sarsaparilla and the sort of, you know, your kwandongs. So if you look at the colors of the fruits and the leaves, you can match it up with the type of meat usually gives you a good
hot tip. I tell you what, I had ground wattle seed on hummus, changed my life. I can't go back. It's amazing. It's almost like a hazelnutty sort of taste, isn't it? Oh my God. Try it, everybody. Go and find some ground wattle seed from an ethical supplier. Do you have a favorite supplier that you like?
Look, it's probably a shout out to my sister Sharon, Sharon Windsor from Indigi Earth. You've got Indigi Grow, which is Pete Cooley in Sydney, which are doing more fresh produce. So Supply Nation is probably the database where I would point a lot of people to find authentic Indigenous suppliers.
What I'd love to tap into a little bit more, where you talked a bit about your camps, or you said that you do cooking for cultural awareness training. Can you tell me a bit about that, what you do? Because it's quite unusual. I mean, I run cultural immersions for registrars and we head off, you know, for a couple of nights. So how do you run it?
Similar, 2 nights, 40 hours. Well, I've been leading those and running those for the last 11 years now. But my grandfather, he's been doing cultural tours for tourism for best part of 40 odd years, you know. Obviously, it's a strong family legacy that's been passed down. People generally come from all walks. Obviously, we do similar to yourself, like in terms of, you know, tailored groups. So it's a bit of a mixed bag of who generally turns up, but they basically go through the same process, you know. And again, I talked about process work and how important that is. So yeah, they obviously get their 2 nights accommodation, they experience a smoking ceremony, and they sit in 2 very powerful discussions that we have, or sometimes actually it's probably 3-2 in the evening and 1 in the morning of the final morning, which on a weekend is a Sunday morning. So they turn up Friday, finish Sunday, or we run Sunday to Tuesday as well, you know, so sort of blocking those days out for people once a month. That's my cream and cherry on top. I love that work. It's not really work. It's a responsibility. Connecting people deeper, you know, getting them to understand our stories and what they either can do is either two experiences. They can learn about the songline from a lot of Gadu, which we say is the word for ocean and water, Nadu. There's an ocean and water sort of more series, which is the same songline, or they can go up on the mountain, which we call Guliga, which I referred to earlier, which holds our creation story. And that's where a lot of the Yuin Mora and the Yuin people have been doing teachings for a long time. So basically, they're partaking in a teaching and a ceremonial process, you know, very respectfully. It's amazing. I'm very blessed to do it. And I'd love to, you know, get more people to come along and share that journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll put all of that information about your cultural awareness tours in the show notes as well. Dwayne, I was just thinking when you were saying there about the ocean and that connection right now where we are, the whales are sort of heading back down with their bubbies. Do they swing by your place? Do they come in and say g'day?
They do. I have to sing a song for them, and I'm singing songs for them now. Mummy and baby are feeding on the krill and having a bit of a gnaw, you know, while the baby will be feeding on the krill more predominantly while the mother protects. And then daddy whale's there, you know, slapping the water, celebrating, you know, that migration. So yeah, my grandfather will be releasing a book about Gurul, the whale. So he's one of 5 initiated elders left that holds that story in the country. So that's an important one for us. The whale is one of our elders and such an important and integral part to our season and our cycle. So yeah, right now the wattle's definitely on and it's flowering. And I was having a swim 2 days ago. It's a hard life, and a dolphin popped up 10 meters away from me. So So when Dharawari the dolphin is on the way, usually Gurul isn't too far behind the whale. So
beautiful. And you sing for them, so you stand out energetically,
different
call them
around
in.
Around the fire, or, you know, obviously I've been doing it around the fire a bit. We usually go out and do a full ceremony at this time, you know, either with us mob or share that with our Second Nations mob too. But at the moment, you've got to improvise. So still singing the songs, you know, because they're still on the move. They're not in lockdown.
No. They're not restricted. They can move more than 20 Ks. Well, thank you so much. I mean, I love whales. I go over to North Stradbroke Island, Madeirabah, and, you know, I gammon like cool with my heart. I open my heart energy to them and I go, show yourself, because I get so excited when I see whales breaching and their little water sprouts. So thank you for singing the song for them. My brother, thank you so much for joining me today. I've really enjoyed our conversation. You're a very special man, and I urge everybody to have a listen to your podcast, Bring Back the Warrior, because it's a concept particularly for our men and our women to understand, to help us all be a better society.
Beautiful. Thanks for having me on, sis. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Indigenous Health Med Talk with Dr. Danielle Arabina. Please subscribe to the podcast and check out our YouTube channel, Indigenous Health Med Talk. This podcast is a General Practice Training Queensland initiative, supported by Australian General Practice Training and the Australian Government.